As the owner of the Apollo Soda Water Company, Oscar was a man of means, at least by the standards of Lemnos. He was close to 50 when he went back to the old country and took a bride, Zavira Constantaras, 21 years younger and with a big dowry. Back in Aliquippa 3 years later, Gustav Rakatos was born into a household that would know nothing but unrelenting hard work. His earliest memories are of his father moving about in the kitchen at 4:30 a.m., eating his breakfast of pork chops and potatoes and polishing off several beers and a couple of shots, if it was cold, before walking downstairs to begin the day's labor. By 5 a.m. he would have the bottling machine cranked up and moving. On one side was Luisa, a large black woman who placed the dirty bottles on the beginning of the 35-foot line. Miraculously, the chain apparatus would turn the bottles upside down as soap and water poured in and out to prepare them for an infusion of Oscar's secret cherry and cola formulas. There were always incidents. The bottles would sometimes explode from the pressure like hand grenades, sending glass shrapnel all over the room. One such piece sliced into Gust's face and cost him a full day's work. At first, it was a thrill for the boy to be included. But by 16, he had accumulated 40 quarters of Social Security, and the novelty had worn off. This was the kind of punishing physical labor that quickly makes a man out of a boy. It was at the Apollo Soda Water Company that Avrakatos developed his frightening convictions about revenge. His first mentor had been Vasil Rasinko, a Ukrainian who worked at the end of the bottle line, heaving cases into the trucks. Rosinko had found his wife in bed with another man and had murdered them both. After Rosinko spent 15 years in prison, Oscar gave him his job back, and Vasil took it upon himself to help educate Oscar's boy. He warned young Gust never to trust a Ukrainian woman and taught him that revenge is sweet. But Avrakatos's most powerful memory was of his mother at the kitchen table demanding to know what Oscar intended to do about an insult. "You're not going to let this pass, are you? You are going to get even, aren't you?" In the Avrakatos household, revenge was a matter of family honor. As a boy of 12, Gust would go with his father to the bars to collect unpaid bills. He learned not to show fear when Oscar would face down bartenders and begin hurling bottles, threatening to take the bar apart if the money due him was not paid immediately. The Avrakatos family did not tolerate freeloaders. There was no TV in the house, and on Saturday nights Gust would be allowed to sit at the table in the kitchen to listen to his father and uncles talk politics and trade family stories. The men were particularly proud of the family name in spite of its ambiguous meaning in Greek, without pants, or those without pants. Whenever she became frustrated with Oscar, Zafira would suggest that some ancestor had been caught in a compromising sexual relationship. The Avrakatos men insisted that the name referred back to men who functioned as a kind of Praetorian guard in ancient times. These Avrakatoses were a fierce warrior class, so the family legend went, who would throw off all their clothes when going into battle and charge the enemy. The sight of screaming naked warriors was enough to cause most opponents to break and run. Whether or not the legend is true, these stories shaped the young boy's sense of his identity and destiny, and they help explain why his father made such extreme demands on his son. He forced Gust to take private lessons in Greek and Latin. "Each new language gives you a new set of eyes and ears, a new window on the world," he repeatedly told his complaining child. Even free time on Sunday was given over to torturous work at the Greek Orthodox Church, where, amid chanting priests and incense, Gust would spend 4 hours serving as an altar boy. But the main thing Oscar and Zafira did for their son was to fill him with the sense that he must get out of the steel town. And the path of liberation that Oscar chose gleamed like a vision directly across the street from their home. Like Andrew Carnegie, the founders of Aliquippa had built a library. It was not a simple utilitarian building, but a shining citadel of limestone and bronze in the form of a Greek temple. On the cornices in great letters were carved the words, "History, science, fiction, philosophy, biology, and astronomy." Every evening after dinner, after hours of humping beer kegs and a full day at school, Gustav Rakatos would walk the 200 feet across Franklin Avenue, pass through the great bronze doors of the Benjamin Franklin Jones Memorial Library, and take the seat at a mahogany desk reserved for him. There he would switch on the individual bronze reading lamp with its Tiffany-style glass shade and begin the serious work of the day. It was what his father expected and demanded. The library was like a window into the world of the possible beyond the bars, the union halls, and a life of servitude in the iron house. In the winter, it might be snowing when he entered the library, but the white accumulation would have already turned black with soot by the time he finished his evening studies. Inside, the classics were all there. Fine oil paintings hung on the wall. The beamed ceilings were high, the windows huge. At the doorway towered a bronze statue of the founder, Benjamin Franklin Jones, passing on his unspoken message to all who entered that here in this temple of learning was a way out for those willing to apply themselves. Each night all the ethnic achievers of Aliquippa would be there, studying, wandering through the stacks, improving their minds. And none of the deserving working-class kids of Aliquippa worked so hard or did so well as Gust Lascaris of Rakatos, who graduated as valedictorian of Aliquippa High. Then followed 2 years working his way through Carnegie Tech in Pittsburgh, until disaster struck and Oscar had to close down his beloved Apollo Soda Water Company. Coca-Cola and Pepsi had moved into Aliquippa, cutting prices. According to the family's old world code, Gust had to leave school to pay off his father's debts. For the first time, Gust went to work in the mill. Then he began traveling up and down the Allegheny Valley for the Greek-American Cigarette Vending Machine Company, selling cigarette machines to bars. He had never left Pennsylvania, but by the time he was 21, he knew how people from numerous different countries talked and thought and drank and sang and argued. He knew the world the way few American boys his age do, because every one of those political clubs where he delivered beer and sold cigarettes was a virtual enclave of foreigners. There was the Syrian Club, the Cedars of Lebanon Club, the Pan-Slovak Club, the Russian-American Club, the Croatian Club, the Ukrainian Club. One for virtually every country of the world, and Avrakatos had discovered that he could increase his sales if he knew what each of these groups cared about. I started reading to find out what the fuck to say when I was trying to sell cigarettes in the different bars. To sell, you needed to talk to the Serbs and the Croatians, and you needed to know what they cared about. And the one thing that was common was that not many of them were saying anything nice about the communists. Not the Ukrainians, not the Serbians, not the Croatians, the Polacks, the Czechs, the Slovaks. They all fucking hated the Russians. All of them were out of their countries because of the Russians. The Syrians, of course, hated the Jews. Maybe the only group not anti-communist were the blacks. They were more practically biased. The others blamed the Russians for everything, for why we were working 16 hours a day in the mill and paying taxes. Avrakatos became a master at endearing himself to all these prickly tribes. He can still say in perfect Slovak, "Take your balls and stuff them up your ass." This always pleased the Slovaks, who laughed appreciatively and offered the crazy Greek a boilermaker. These forays into the ethnic enclaves of western Pennsylvania and the special skills required to maneuver there were not designed to serve any particular purpose beyond moving beer and cigarettes. Unbeknownst to Gust, they also constituted a remarkable introduction into the worlds he would later pass through for the CIA. Curiously, it was not the agency, but IBM that first wanted to enlist Avrakatos. After paying off his father's debts in 1959, he had gone back to school at the University of Pittsburgh, graduating summa cum laude and Phi Beta Kappa with a degree in mathematics. The IBM recruiter was so impressed that he offered Gust $15,500. "I was 24 years old, and that was a lot of money in those days, roughly equivalent to $60,000 today. All I had to do was get my master's, and they'd pay my tuition." But then the recruiter started to tell him about IBM's corporate image, and how they would expect him to adapt to some of their ways of doing things, a dress code for one, and then there was the issue of his car. It was a 1947 Dodge four-door, and it was the pride of Avrakatos's life. "We called it the fuckmobile," he recalls fondly today. "It had over 3,000 miles on it and was all souped up to look like a Lincoln Zephyr, like a gangster car. So I said, 'What's wrong with the car?' 'It's old.' 'It's an antique,' Gust said." "Around here, we drive Pontiacs," the IBM man explained.